Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report, a special Friday edition for November 13th, 2015. On today's show, we talk to the author of a new report on transportation costs for the Lower Snake River, where the four Lower Snake River dams are being considered for removal. But first, this news. The Associated Press reports they have surveyed the four superdelegates to next year's Democratic convention from Idaho and found three are uncommitted and one is committed to supporting former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Superdelegates can support any candidate they want to, regardless of the outcome of the primaries or caucuses. Nationally, superdelegates account for 30% of the number of delegates needed to clinch a Democratic presidential nomination. Democratic National Committee member Carolyn Boyce of Idaho is supporting Clinton, saying she has better experience and is more electable. State Democratic Party Chair Bert Marley, Vice Chair Jeannie Buell, and Democratic National Committee member Pete Gortenson, all Idaho superdelegates, remain uncommitted. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter said this week he would have preferred if the federal government had decided to protect sage grouse under the Endangered Species Act rather than have to follow new federal regulations on sage grouse habitat. The Interior Department decided in September not to list sage grouse under the Endangered Species Act. Previous to that, Idaho officials had tried to come up with a state sage grouse management plan that would help prevent listing. But after the decision not to list, Idaho sued over the federal land use plan for the 11 states containing significant sage grouse habitat. Otter contends the federal government's plan did not take into account Idaho's plans protecting sage grouse habitat. Idaho is the only state that has sued over the federal sage grouse management plan, but Governor Otter said Tuesday he expects more support from other states. He told land management officials he doesn't know if Idaho will win the lawsuit. Idaho County Commissioner Jim Chmielik told a small group meeting at the Lewiston Community Center yesterday he would like his coalition of western counties to eventually sue the federal government to get federal lands transferred to states or private owners. Speaking to a group of about 15 who showed up, Chmielik said the lawsuits would be based on the idea the federal government has harmed western states by failing to transfer federal lands. He said the other basis for the suits would be what he called federal mismanagement of public lands. Chmielik founded the Western Landmark Foundation this year, which currently has 13 counties around the West in its coalition. According to a report in the Lewiston Tribune, Chmielik said, once we get to 50, then we'll ask them to provide the money and have our attorneys start doing their thing. Chmielik said money raised from the $3,000 to $5,000 dues paid by counties will also pay for a communication strategy addressing public perception of how federal lands are managed. The former Northern Idaho Special Olympics director says mismanagement by the statewide Special Olympics of Idaho organization has resulted in canceled fundraisers, unpaid bills, and layoffs. Former regional director Pam Lysenby told the Daily News, even though local teams have worked hard and raised funds, local athletes are being turned away from venues because the main office is not reconciling unpaid bills on time. Lysenby was laid off along with two other regional directors, the full-time director of development and full-time vice president for outreach. Lysenby told the paper she still gets calls from venue owners and others waiting to be paid. She said some of them have been unable to reach anybody at the state office in Boise. In addition, volunteer Coeur d'Alene Eagles program coordinator Michelle Daly was fired after suggesting Special Olympics of Idaho save money by splitting into northern and southern regions. Special Olympics of Idaho Sports and Training Director Opie Friedel told volunteers and athletes Daly violated the organization's code of conduct. Friedel told the Daily News Daly's violations related to representing the organization, quote, positively, professionally, and appropriately at all times. Daly said she read the code of conduct and says she did not violate it. Daly said her team raised funds that were pooled into the Special Olympics of Idaho's only bank account and that she expected venues to be paid on time, but they weren't. Special Olympics of Idaho Operations Vice President Dallas Leatham told the Daily News the organization has a $150,000 deficit and they are paying overdue bills to the University of Idaho, which hosted this last summer games, in weekly installments. Late payments at JD's mini storage in Moscow were finally paid after owner Elizabeth Berg told Special Olympics they would start selling off sports equipment stored there if the bill wasn't paid. Leatham said the statewide organization's revenues are much smaller than usual due to canceled fundraisers and other fundraising events that netted less money than projected. The National Marine Fisheries Service announced yesterday it has determined the Navy's plan to expand sonar testing and other military testing in Puget Sound will have no significant effect on orcas and other marine animals. U.S. Pacific Fleet Northwest Environmental Program Manager John Mosher told the Associated Press managers are not saying the testing will have no impact on marine animals, but that the impact will not be considered significant. Environmentalists have opposed the Navy training exercises for years, arguing the activities can kill or harass whales. Center for Biological Diversity Senior Counsel Mayuka Sakashita said, "The ocean is a big place, and the Navy can find areas that are not really important areas to marine animals to conduct their exercises." Washington State University will launch a program to help retain low-income students by providing a 400% match to money the students save. The program, which is called Invest in Success, is being made possible by a four-year, $1 million grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. WSU Provost and Executive Vice President's Office Communications Coordinator Todd Mordhorst told the Daily News there is a strong correlation between academic and financial struggles, and eliminating some student financial problems will help students be more successful in college. WSU Research and Proposal Development Director Michael Highfill said financial hardship is a major reason students drop out of school, and the Invest in Success program will help keep financially needy students in school. Retention and graduation reports from last year show about 32.3% of low-income students graduate from WSU, compared to 40.9% of the overall student population. The program is designed to assist 425 WSU students in the first 4 years of its operation, and the program will accept 85 students into the program each year. Mordhorst said WSU is applying to get more funding to expand the program to WSU branch campuses. To be eligible for the program, students must meet certain financial requirements and must be enrolled in a money management program and take the My Money 101 course. The Idaho Attorney General's Office announced yesterday it will not pursue charges against a Canyon County Sheriff's deputy who shot and killed a 31-year-old man during a domestic disturbance call in March. The Associated Press reported Canyon County Deputy Chad Bingham was the first officer to arrive on the scene of a domestic disturbance call at a Middleton area home March 18th when the shooting victim, 31-year-old Brandon Rapp, emerged from the home. Police say he was carrying a pistol. An Idaho State Police report says a recording on Bingham's body camera shows Officer Bingham asked Rapp to lower his weapon three times before firing four shots at Rapp, hitting him three times. Washington prosecutors will ask the state legislature to develop a referendum on the death penalty to present to state voters next year. The Washington Association of Prosecuting Attorneys said in a statement released yesterday, prosecutors, quote, overwhelmingly believe that the people of the state should vote on the question of whether the state should retain the death penalty as an option in cases of aggravated murder. The death penalty has been on hold in Washington since last year, when Governor Jay Inslee issued a moratorium on the practice for as long as he is in office. That means if a death penalty case comes before him, Inslee will issue a reprieve and the inmate would stay in prison rather than be executed. There currently are 9 men on death row in Washington. The U.S. Board of Geographic Names says a lake and creek in north central Washington will be renamed in honor of the African-American miner who staked claims in the area more than 125 years ago. The Associated Press reports the U.S. Board yesterday approved changing the name of Coon Creek and Coon Lake to Howard Creek and Howard Lake in honor of Wilson Howard. The creek and lake are north of Lake Chelan in the North Cascades National Park Complex. The Washington Supreme Court has ruled the constitutionality of an anti-tax initiative approved by voters this month is unclear, and the issue can be argued in a lower court. The Associated Press reports the Supreme Court ruled unanimously yesterday that opponents of Initiative 1366 did not make a watertight case that it was unconstitutional, but opponents, including lawmakers, have a right to challenge the initiative. The initiative was approved by a 52% margin. The initiative would reduce the state's sales tax from 6.5% to 5.5% unless the legislature approves a constitutional amendment by April 15th requiring a two-thirds majority in the legislature to raise taxes. We now turn to our featured segment. Two major reports on the economics of the four lower Snake River dams were released this week. Anthony Jones of Rocky Mountain Econometrics wrote a report on flat water transportation on the lower Snake. That report was commissioned by Save Our Wild Salmon. The other report on the four lower Snake River dams' energy production was commissioned by Idaho Rivers United. I spoke with Anthony Jones of Rocky Mountain Econometrics about his report this afternoon.
Well, to the extent possible, we used all Corps of Engineers numbers, and we used Corps of Engineers data for shipments on the system. To the extent we used comparable freight rates in rail or trucking and so forth, we used published rates by Burlington Northern and Union Pacific. So we went into substantial depth to make sure that we were both fair, honest, and realistic in all the numbers we used.
Okay. You know, the managers of the dam and the Army Corps of Engineers and so forth are still saying, well, gee, we're doing a great thing and it's economically sustainable.
Well, yeah, absolutely. The purpose of the dams originally was to provide navigation benefits to primarily the wheat and barley growers in the Palouse area of the Northwest. And to the extent they were successful, that time appears to have passed. For instance, when the dams were first put together, quite a few companies really invested substantially and committed themselves to shipping on the river. For instance, Potlatch at the time, before they changed their name to, what is it, Columbia Paper? I mean no slight to the current name of the company, but At the time, Potlatch invested in hybrid poplar plantations down by Hermiston for the purpose of shipping the trees up to Lewiston, processing them for pulp and paper, and shipping the finished products downstream. Ultimately, they found that that was not a realistic way to produce, and they both stopped the hybrid poplar plantations downstream, and they shipped their finished product by other means out. Same kind of story happened with petroleum shipments on the river. Originally, they committed to shipping a substantial amount of petroleum to Lewiston. There is now a pipeline that goes to Spokane, so all of the petroleum shipments have stopped. A similar story for container shipments on the entire Columbia River. There simply wasn't enough cargo to maintain the shippers' needs coming into Portland, so that has stopped. And even the rail companies are competing favorably with the barges these days. Wheat and barley shipments have declined by about 25% to 30% over the past 10 years, as wheat and barley growers are increasingly using rail transportation to go to market. So the trouble for the dams is the costs keep escalating as the dams get older and mitigation costs keep increasing and increasing. At the same time, the products being shipped on the river are decreasing at about 4% a year. So anytime you have an industry where the costs are going up at about 4% a year and the benefits are going down at about 4% a year, you have an industry that's in deep trouble.
Let's talk a little bit more about the wheat and barley, since that's the largest by ton category of things that are shipped by barge on the lower Snake. The farmers just want the extra option of shipping by barge because that would be more competition with trucking. Is that why growers are still pushing for keeping the dams in place?
Well, certainly, it's certainly for some growers, the river still is a very, very good option. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. However, once you get 30, 40, 50 miles away from the river, once you get particularly up in the further north in the Palouse, there's a lot of investment in unit train terminals, and Burlington Northern further south, Union Pacific are doing an excellent job of competing with the barges. And that is strictly competing on the rates that the farmers pay directly to the shippers and neglects completely the cost that the Corps is spending on the dams to keep the navigation channel open. Keep in mind that the farmers pay nothing to the Corps of Engineers for the navigation channel. So realistically, the cost of the dams is so high at this point that it would actually be a money-saving proposition for the Corps to pick up the rail charges for all of the shipments currently running on the Lower Snake River and shut the dams down completely. That's how far out of whack the economics of the dams has gotten to be. That again, it would be cheaper for the Corps to simply pay all the transportation costs of all the traffic that's currently moving on the Lower Snake than it is for what they pay to keep the dams alive.
All right, moving on to the container shipping. Now, why is there almost no container shipping out of Portland now? Because that was the destination for pretty much all the containers that were shipped out of the port of Lewiston. Are dam supporters, depending on a rebound there in Portland?
To the extent I understand what's going on in Portland, it is that a couple of years ago there were as many as 6 or 8 freight companies bringing ships up the Columbia to Portland and picking up containers, but there was too little traffic down there. Most of them pulled out, and there were only 2 container companies still coming up the river. And I believe it was in April, May, and June, the last 2 major container freight companies abandoned Portland on the basis that there simply wasn't enough production. There wasn't enough traffic coming out of Portland to justify the cost of the freight shippers going that far up the Columbia. So they simply pulled out, and they're now going to other West Coast ports, primarily the Puget Sound. So in the process, with no freighters coming to Portland to pick up the containers, there's effectively no container traffic on the entire Columbia system right now, and that includes the Lower Snake River.
Well, what do you think of the Port of Lewiston manager David Doringsfeld's announcement Wednesday that container shipping will resume out of Lewiston in December, albeit at a much lower level than previously?
He knows more about that than I do. However, container shipping was never a major part of traffic on the Lower Snake River anyway. It was, I believe, 3-5% total. And if it's at a substantially reduced volume from that, it will be a very tiny amount. So good luck. I wish them no ill will, but it was never a major portion of traffic on the Lower Snake River. And I haven't heard of a major rebound coming out of Portland, but good luck. I wish them well.
In your report, you said maintaining the navigation channel costs $18 million per year. And I saw another number, $24 million, which included mitigation for navigation. So I was just wondering about the difference between those two numbers.
Well, one is simply the operating cost, and the other one is mitigation for the navigation portion of damage to wildlife, fish, and whatnot. Keep in mind that the way the Corps splits up the costs of the dams. They just subjectively allocate costs between navigation and energy. And so, if you want to talk the Corps' language, you sort of have to cinch up your belt and dance the same dance they do. And it's not entirely clear what costs go to which place. The Corps typically allocates one percentage to the dam to navigation and a different percentage to energy. Keep in mind, mitigation for the entire Columbia drainage is about $750 million a year. So, and it's going up at about 4-5% a year. So, over the course of the dams, they've spent $14 billion on operations to try to make it look to the fish as if the dams didn't exist. Now, that's a lot of money. The question is, how much of that $745 million a year is attributable to just the navigation port? So, I mean, there is room for discussion in there, but the number absolutely positively is bigger than zero.
Yeah, and those numbers are basin-wide, and I see that the cost of maintaining the four Lower Snake River dams, I believe from your study, is $227 million per year. Was that part of your study to find that number out, or was that from different sources?
Well, again, it's subjective, and my effort in the study was to be reasonable, fair, and honest. So the base number is the Corps' number. The parsing it out to navigation versus energy is a more subjective process. Keep in mind that the smaller the number you use for navigation means the bigger number you have to apply to energy. So it's not, the number won't go away. It's just a matter of how much you give to one portion of the dam versus the other portion of the dam. But whichever way you do it, you're still left with a very, very big number.
All right, Tony Jones. Is there anything else you'd like to say to sum up your report that was released this week?
I guess my biggest wish for the entire, particularly the state, for the Northwest, is for the Corps to release good, serious, honest numbers and to enter into a discussion with the people of the Northwest, a fair and reasonable discussion about whether the dams are really are a real, honest benefit or whether they, as it appears to me, are doing more damage than they're doing good.
That was Rocky Mountain Econometrics economist Anthony Jones speaking from Boise today. Jones, who is a former staff economist for the Idaho Public Utilities Commission, wrote a new report called Lower Snake River Dam Navigation Study, which has just been released. The report was commissioned by Save Our Wild Salmon. Save Our Wild Salmon Northwest Director Sam Mace said in the press release, "These reports raise new and serious questions about the economic value and viability of four dams, which costs appear to exceed their benefits. Can our region afford to maintain high-cost, low-value infrastructure when other valuable projects in the basin that deliver greater value are themselves facing expensive upgrades and repairs? Costs to maintain and operate this infrastructure are going to continue to rise as it ages." Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. 50% chance of rain tonight, cloudy, low 42, south winds 15 miles an hour, gusts up to 20, 30% chance of rain before noon tomorrow, partly sunny, high 54, mostly cloudy Saturday night, low 39, and on Sunday, 40% chance of rain, with a chance of rain and snow showers late in the afternoon, cloudy, high 41, breezy, southeast winds 15 to 20, becoming southwest 25 to 30 in the afternoon, with gusts up to 40 miles an hour, less than half an inch of snow possible. 20% chance of snow showers before midnight Sunday night, mostly cloudy, low 31, partly sunny on Monday, high 38. I'm Lee Robartis. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Alan Solon assisted with tonight's newscast.